While we're talking about metabolic risks and obesity, one of the preventable factors we can do something about is the consumption of sugar-sweetened drinks. We've talked a lot about sugar taxes on the Health Report, and they do seem to work in reducing consumption. But what about other ways of getting people, particularly young people, to drink less of these potentially harmful beverages? Well, last week, a group from the Cochrane Collaboration, which exists to analyse the evidence for medical and public health interventions, released a review of the studies into various strategies targeting sugar-sweetened drinks, including sweetened milk. Peter von Philipsborn was the lead author. Peter is a researcher at the University of Munich, and he's on the line from Germany now. Thanks for joining us on the Health Report.
Good morning, Norman. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Why did you leave taxation out of this review?
That's a very good question because, as you've already mentioned, there's quite good evidence showing that taxation of sugary drinks can work. It can reduce the consumption of these beverages. And that's actually also one of the reasons why we left it out, because it has already been shown quite well that they work. And probably they're only part of the story. There are also other measures, and these measures were the focus of our review, the additional ones which can be implemented besides a levy or a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages.
So you were looking for large interventions that were scalable, that you could scale up to larger scale population-wise?
Absolutely, absolutely, because to produce the changes in dietary behaviors which are really needed to stem or to overturn the rise in obesity which we are observing, we need measures which can be implemented on a large scale, not just within small scale within individual schools, for example, but really on a population level.
So the health report is a rusted-on believer in randomized controlled trials. Are there many randomized controlled trials with population intervention to try and reduce sugar-sweetened beverages?
There are some, but actually not many, simply because it is, of course, very difficult to implement this study type, the randomized controlled study, on a population level. So we also relied on non-randomized evidence.
So before and after studies, for example. So when you looked at the evidence, what approaches stood out as having some reasonable evidence to support them?
Yes, one approach which stood out because it's supported quite well by the evidence and also because it can be implemented really on a large scale is labeling, so nutritional labeling schemes. And what we've seen is that it's really important that these schemes are easy to understand. So we had some studies on nutritional rating score labeling, like the Health Star rating, as it is used in Australia. And this seems to work. It seems to have a positive effect on consumption patterns. And we've also seen some effects for traffic light labeling systems, which use a color coding to indicate the healthfulness of beverages.
So red, amber, green. What do they use in Germany?
In Germany, we don't have a mandatory system yet.
Just like us, we don't either.
Yeah. This certainly is a field of action for governments worldwide to make such systems both better and mandatory.
I think there's only 7.5% of Australian foods that are Health Star rated, but we'll come back to that's a story for another day. Now, what else worked in terms of actually reducing sugar-sweetened beverages?
We've also seen that what really matters is what kind of beverages are offered in schools and in other educational institutions and public institutions in general. And of course, schools matter, particularly for children and teenagers. And we've seen that when in schools, sugary drinks are removed and healthier beverages are offered instead, that this can reduce consumption.
And you looked at price as well. Independent of taxation, you looked at price.
Yes. And we've seen that people do react to price signals. That is, when the price of sugary drinks is increased, then consumption goes down. And this is, of course, also the effect on which sugary drink taxes rely.
And is that just in young people? Because if you take with tobacco, for example, with cigarettes, children and young people are more price sensitive than adults, and it's very quite dramatic. Is that price signal for all age groups or just the young people?
Of course, there are good reasons to believe that especially children and teenagers are especially price sensitive. But in the studies which we included on price increases, we've seen effects in all age groups.
And what about the home?
Yes, beverages which are available at home matter, especially for children and teenagers. And when the availability of healthier low-calorie beverages is improved at home, that this can replace consumption of sugary drinks.
So fairly obvious stuff, but the things that people can get on with without waiting for taxation to change.
Absolutely. But of course, what matters is that these measures are also implemented and are implemented ideally on a population, on a policy level. And that's where the governments come in. Politicians have to act.
Yes, don't they ever. Peter, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Peter von Philipsborn is a medical researcher at the University of Munich.